Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Well, the question, why do bad things happen to good people, is one we've all heard and very possibly asked. It really sums up the sense of injustice we often feel at how messed up and chaotic the world can be. The phrase good things happen to good people is not one you hear so much, but that's what Stephen Post believes. It's even the name of a book he wrote.
Bad things happen to good people. They happen to everybody. Nobody gets out of life alive. But as a wide scientific generalization, people who contribute meaningfully to the lives of others will live happier, more gratifying, more resilient, healthier, and even, again, on average, longer lives.
That was Stephen Post, Director of the Centre for Medical Humanities, Compassionate Care and Bioethics at Stony Brook University in New York. He's also the author of several books, including Why Good Things Happen to Good People. He's dedicated a fair bit of his own life to researching whether you can live a longer, happier and healthier life by the simple act of giving and helping other people. So, Stephen, the usual phrase is that bad things happen to good people, and why is that? And our world is a place of chaos and suffering. But you want to argue that good things happen to good people. So how do we know that? What's the evidence for this?
The evidence is abundant. A wonderful study, for example, that began in the late 1920s at Berkeley in California, looked at 300 12-year-olds. It discovered that 100 of the 300 were motivated by wanting to help humanity, to do something with their talents, to make a difference in the world. These 300 kids were followed every 10 years over the course of their lifetimes. The 100 who had that higher motivation were relatively free of depression and even physical illnesses. They also now, well into their late 90s, you have about 70 of these individuals who are still alive, and two-thirds of the ones who are still living come from the one-third who, as preteens, as 12-year-olds, said, I want to help people with my gifts. On and on and on and on, science is pointing out how when we disinhibit our capacities to be generous and we live by the golden rule, we live a better life.
Well, Stephen, tell us a bit more about the sort of benefits that might come to you from doing good. What kind of good are we talking about here?
Basically, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's not the minimal version of that. It's not do not do unto others.
Right. There's a big difference between those two things that people often miss, right?
It's a big difference. So the second one, the do not do unto others, is very minimal. It means, okay, all the listeners can get home tonight and put their feet up on the couch feeling great about their lives because they did not elbow some innocent wayfarer on George Street in the ribs. But do unto others requires using the moral imagination and asking yourself across the day, how can you contribute meaningfully to the lives of others? And so it's love, basically. And I have a common definition of love that I find people can connect with. When the happiness and security of another is as real to me as my own, I love that person. This can be manifested, this love of neighbor, can be manifested in many different ways according to people's gifts. So some people are really compassionate and they are working in the hospice or they're working for Hammond Care with the deeply forgetful individuals in a really effective way. Some people are mirthful. They have the gift of tasteful, clean humor, and they can uplift an environment. Some people are, I call it carefrontational. They're the people who can sit down with you and kind of review your situation in life and make you realize where you could do some improving, but they still keep the connection with you empathically.
They manage to do that without offending you.
Offended, yeah. And some people, it's creativity. I mean, there are wonderful artists, musicians, who really are motivated by benefiting humanity, people working in laboratory science to try to cure a major disease. So there are lots of different ways of everyday helping. Just volunteering is a way of love. But in the end, when you live that kind of life, all the science points out, you know, you've got a better chance of inner peace, tranquility, gratification, happiness, a relative freedom from anxiety and even a physically healthier life.
So this has been a big question in philosophy since ancient times, the idea of is good, doing good its own reward? Is being virtuous, does that pay off? Or, you know, the opposite idea, does crime pay? So are you wanting to say here that science is kind of now giving an answer to that question, that old ethical question?
I am, but, you know, this is nuanced. So I'm not saying that virtue is its own reward in terms of tit for tat, pay it back thinking. It's much more pay it forward. Just forget about reciprocal calculations. I did a paper on widows and widowers who had been happily married for many years, and it turns out that they got through grief and bereavement more quickly if they could just self-report informal helping in their environment. They did much better. So I was asked by this Society of Widows and Widowers in New York to do a plenary at their annual conference. I presented some of this information. There was a guy in the back at the Q&A, and he says, "I don't care what you say, Doc. I don't do nothing for nothing." And I knew that I wasn't really connecting. It's not that you're going to be guaranteed this kind of reciprocal gain or reputational gain, but there is a gratification of being in touch with that side of yourself, especially in hard times.
So this isn't a view of karma or an idea like that then. Do you think that this does reflect something then about, what does that say about humans, what we're like, how we tick?
Well, you know, I was up in Littletown, Connecticut, which is where this school Sandy Hook is located. And some years ago, about 6 years ago, a whole group of 26 children and teachers were just gunned down. I went up there the day afterwards, went into the Starbucks, and these big national TV commentators were literally in tears on the chairs. And I noticed, though, within about 24 hours, there was a bumper sticker that was on all the cars, and it was on the windows of the stores, and it said, "We are Sandy Hook. We choose love. We are Sandy Hook. We choose love." And, you know, you get these events, and the bottom line is you want to love, because the alternative is rumination, bitterness, hostility, protracted stress, loss of meaning. And in the end, that's like acid on metal. You're going to have vascular disease. You're going to have hippocampal atrophy. You're going to have slower wound healing. If you focus, even in the hardest times, this is not Pollyannish, you know, on what you can do to make a difference in the lives around you, you really turn off even all the neurological circuits associated with hostility and destructive emotions.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're speaking with Stephen Post about the benefits of giving and helping, how being generous can actually lead to a longer and happier life.
As a gross generalization, it's good to be good for some of the reasons we've discussed, but that shouldn't be driving you. You should just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You should live because you respect the lives of others. You see value in others. You don't want to relate to them just insofar as they contribute to your little narrow agendas and no further, you know. They're of equal value. You want to be equal regarding. But it just turns out that in general, when you live that kind of a life, you're going to flourish.
So there can be times in life where it's quite difficult to give or to help other people, you know, if you're going through quite a rough time yourself. And I think you have some experience of this personally. How have you gone about putting these lessons into practice in your own life when it's been challenging?
Well, first of all, I work in a big hospital. I get very concerned about all the nurses and doctors. Half of those individuals would quit medicine if they could afford to. About 20% of them have self-reported depression. A good number of them will drop out of their fields in relatively short order, as in 7 to 10 years. And that's because the expectation is so much of giving, and they don't have balance. They can't step back and have self-compassion and kind of think about their own well-being, because it's very hard to take care of others unless you are being a good steward of your own mental and physical health. I mean, we have these responsibilities of self-care, which are incredibly important. So I think that it's easy to get burned out. Some people call it compassion fatigue. We need to be much more attentive to this as a problem for people in the health professions, for example. So I have to be careful because I work in a medical school and have been in medical schools for 30 years now. I have to be really careful not to be completely overwhelmed, completely burned out. And I'm not. I feel pretty good. But I do a lot of clinical consultations, and I'm always monitoring myself and trying to get to the park for a walk and you know, take care of my family and just think about the whole scope of my life. That's really important.
So is part of what you're doing in this book looking at the sort of insights that more ancient wisdom has provided, let's say particularly from Christian faith, offering wisdom to people who might may or may not share that faith? Is that part of what you're trying to do?
Yes, I'm an Anglican, I guess you would say here. I'm an Episcopalian in the United States, same thing, more or less, same Book of Common Prayer.
Yes.
And I really believe there's a statement in the Book of Acts attributed to Christ, and it basically says, 'tis better to give than to receive. And it kind of echoes throughout Western history. You see it in St. Francis of Assisi. You find it in Shakespeare, in W.H. Auden. It just is there, that somehow it's better to give than to receive. That doesn't mean that receiving is bad, but giving is the key thing. And I believe in that. And I like the Pauline statement about God loving a cheerful giver. We're called by God to be loving. And I like dealing with it, though, purely in a scientific setting. You know, I've probably published a couple of hundred papers in very good scientific venues, American Journal of Psychiatry, American Journal of Addiction, you name it. I mean, we've done a lot of work on alcoholic youth and how they have, if they're high helpers in the 12-step programs, the AA programs, after 1 year, 40% of them are still sober. If they're low quartile helpers, only 22% are sober. So you double the likelihood of overcoming alcoholism and addiction more broadly if you're a high helper. These things make a difference.
A lot of this, Stephen, sounds like it's playing strongly into this idea of spiritual health. This is something that's emphasized more and more in kind of medical circles. How important an aspect is the spiritual aspect to having a long, happy life?
Spirituality is absolutely key. You know, the AA big book, the Blue Book, says we are cured on the two axes of spirituality and altruism. I think that spirituality has, for me anyway, and this is a very subjective notion, for me it has to do with my sense of oneness with a supreme being of pure, unlimited love. And in that relationship with the supreme being, I feel healed, and I feel that I can be healing to the people around me. And I also feel that I can be more creative and productive and even protected.
Well, Stephen Post, that sort of healing and health is of great interest to many people. It's wonderful to have you in Australia and into the CPX studio. Thanks for coming in.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Simon Smart, and Natasha and I have been speaking with Stephen Post today. Maybe this conversation will even motivate you to help a friend or perhaps give to charity today, and you'll feel good doing it. If you're after more episodes of Life and Faith, we have loads available on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us.
Next week, we travel to Boston with our producer, Karen Tong, for a one-on-one with a member of the Boston Globe's investigative reporting team, Spotlight. So this is the team that investigated child sexual abuse in the city's Catholic Church back in 2001, and it was the subject of the film Spotlight, which took out this year's Best Picture Oscar. Join us then.